It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and James Parsons.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with James Parsons. Our website is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Lots of good information there if you're interested. We're broadcasting from the state of Oklahoma. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the health insurance exchanges and the connection to what the public calls Obamacare. We have, as our guest today, Oklahoma's Chief Information Officer, Alex Pettit. The position of Chief Information Officer was created in 2010 in this state by House Bill 1170. And he is currently on the phone because he's at a conference in Dallas, Texas. So we're very appreciative of the time that he's taking away from the conference and other activities to be with us. Our guest for the second half will be Representative David Derby, who represents the city of Owosso in the Oklahoma legislature. And without further ado, we will bring up Alex Pettit. Are you there?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. For our listeners, would you please give us a little bit of a background on what the chief information, first off, how you got to Oklahoma, and what your job as Chief Information Officer of Oklahoma entails?
Okay, well, House Bill 1170 was passed in beginning of June of 2009, and they solicited for applicants beginning in about August of that year, and I was interviewed by then Governor Brad Henry, as well as his members of his staff, as Treasurer Scott Meacham, Chief of Staff Gerald Adams, and at the time I was at Brown University as a project manager managing their data center. We were going through and rebuilding the entire data center, so that was and it was just coming to an end there, so it was a good time to go to Oklahoma. My family and my personal family, it comes from West Texas, a little town called Pettit, Texas, that's between Amarillo and Lubbock. There's another half of the family that's from southeastern Oklahoma. There's a Pettit, Oklahoma, but other than knowing them from the genealogy tree, I really don't know a whole lot about them. So, anyway, I'm just very glad to be here. My role is to, at the moment, I work to coordinate and identify duplicate things in the infrastructure, things we could be doing better, more efficiently, trying to help the IT. There's really two types of IT processes or services, if you like. There's the commodity type, and then there are the specific services that help the agencies achieve their mission and vision. And my primary focus right now, of course, is on getting the commodity type services centralized and normalize those, having the right level of labor and material and investment and such that to do it the most efficiently and cost effectively as possible. Then free them up to the rest of the folks to work on delivering those things that improve the quality of the service delivery to the citizens and stakeholders of the state.
All right. Would you, for our listening audience, would you please define some terms? Define what IT means and involves,
sure.
And also then go into what you mean by commodity type services. Can you give some specifics?
Sure. IT is information technology, and for the state of Oklahoma, that's defined to be all of the computers and fax systems and radios and telecommunications equipment we use. commodity services are things where the easiest way to think about it is the differences that don't make a difference, I guess. If you think about, for instance, dial tone, when you pick up a cell phone and you get dial tone, you can't really tell the difference between Verizon tone and AT&T's dial tone and Sprint's dial tone and Fine Telephone's dial tone. They all sound the same. And so to the end user, dial tone is dial tone. There's no real difference in quality. It is a commodity service, but and there's a lot of things that we do in IT and information technology that are commodity in nature. Storage, network services, connectivity, internet access. There's really not a whole lot of difference between those things when you sit down, file and print services, when you actually use them. It's like electricity coming out of a 110 plug. It's either there or it isn't. So the quality is very difficult to, or impossible, in fact, to discern between providers. That's how I would define commodity.
All right. Would commodity also be something that would be considered software?
Not necessarily. It could be, though, yes. Software services would be. Commodity software services for us would be things like email. Pretty much email is email is email. So there are some differences between something like a Google Mail or a Microsoft Mail or a Hotmail account or whatever. But in the end, all email is largely the same. Now, specific to the state, we have certain requirements around email, of course. You know, it's got to be archivable. It's got to be searchable for open records requests. It's got to be. So there are other features, if you like, that we have to provide. So I wouldn't say it's completely a commodity in that it has to. We wouldn't want to see someone use email that doesn't conform or couldn't support our retention and open records requirements. So there are some nuances there, but insofar as email is concerned generally, I'd say it certainly is becoming a commodity service.
On a commodity, when I hear the word commodity, I think of trading on the New York Stock Exchange in stock as a commodity. Are these items, when you're calling them commodity-type services that could be profitable for whoever gets the contract for that commodity with the state of Oklahoma?
It could be, I guess. You know, it would depend upon volume, of course, that they're getting. When I think of commodity, I'm a little simpler than I think about like 2x4s. You know, I go and I look at 2x4 wood if I'm going to build something, and it doesn't really matter if I get it from Lowe's or Home Depot or 88 or whatever. I'm looking for 2x4s by 6s. So it's really the quantity I'm interested in. And sure, if they one may have a little variance on price, that one they may be more knotty, maybe more different things about it, maybe quality issues. But by and large, if I'm going to use it to build a dock house or some structure, I'm just going to go through and I'm really looking for, I won't be able to tell the difference between them. And once I put up my siding is, or sheetrock or whatever I'm going to use on the outside, I won't even be able to see it. It'll be invisible to me. So, I need it to do good enough, but that's not really what people see. That's not really the underlying service or the thing they're trying to achieve is email. They're trying to achieve communication. So how I do it, invisible to the recipient.
On the IT infrastructure, the state of Oklahoma currently has a contract with a global company called Capgemini, the U.S. division of the global company called Capgemini, and they're a global outsourcing technology and consulting firm, and they were paid. Just $100 under $1 million to do an IT assessment of the state. Can you give our listeners an update on what that involved and where we are in that process right now of the IT assessment?
Well, sure. We, as per the bill, I was required to deliver a management report assessing the IT across the state of Oklahoma, and it was to be a comprehensive assessment, so we needed to look at, we needed to get a good idea of what all 132 agencies and the schools, the higher education schools, were using as far as technology, and propose opportunities to find efficiencies and improve quality. And so we began that, I guess it was in June, no, I'm sorry, I was going to say July, but it was actually August 1st when we started the study. And
of 2010, August 2010.
We awarded it. I forget the date of the award, but it was in August. I know that because it was hot. So
it was hot.
My apologies for the. Yeah, but we did. We started the data collection right away, and then we began. We really wrapped that up a little later than we would have liked. We'd like to have had it done around Thanksgiving, but it was closer to Christmas, and we began doing the data evaluation, and we found some. We had some preliminary findings that were presented to the, to the governor and to the House Modernization Committee and some other folks, to all the IT folks, of course, in the state. I've got a little blog that I put up, and I try to keep them informed with things that are going on and what have you. So we posted some of those findings, and then so right now, the short answer to your question is currently, I got the latest revision. This is probably the fourth revision of the report here to me last Friday, and then these last nights after the conference, I've been staying up late and writing my edits in, and I just got uploaded to them. Well, technically, I guess, early this evening. And so they have those, and we're hoping, I'm hoping, that they will be ready for a preliminary report to be issued here this week.
Is your blog available to the public, or is that a blog just for the members of the IT system?
Network. Right now it's just all the various agency IT people. I say various agency IT people. I mean, you know, the school, the higher education, the court folks, all the agency staff. I want to encourage them to ask questions of me, and I'm trying to establish rapport with them and let them, I guess, appreciate how where the focus of this is, which is really upon simplification of the commodity services. So all the stuff that they don't really want to do anyway, if that, you know, makes any sense. So trying to get them to, you know, I think it's very important to communicate and communicate as often as you can and solicit responses and questions that's really the form I use for that.
All right. On the communication, are there any agencies or entities outside of the state that are part of that communication?
Well, I do reach out to different groups. I've presented to the Rotary Clubs, couple of the Rotary Clubs, one down in Chickasha and... I think where the other one was.
No, outside of the state. But, I mean, is Cap Gemini included in that community outside of the state?
Well, the direct answer is no. Although I give presentations on things, I don't really present. I haven't really presented anything insofar as any of the. I mean, I talk about the management study at a very high level, but I don't. Although there are stakeholders like businesses and vendors and things like that interested, you know, I mean, really, their interest is more upon what is the general direction for information technology and what are our priorities there. So And I've tried to communicate that. So, you know, like with the radio system and such, I've tried to explain how the state is looking to implement a data line on the 700 megahertz, and we're looking at rolling out long-term evolution or LTE on the radio systems for public safety folks, so that they have an idea of what it is we're trying to accomplish and why we think this is the direction we want to go in and what have you.
As far as the state, when I was reading the Capgemini contract, one of the things that was the justification for doing the as-is assessment, and then there's a 2B goal, and then the roadmap to get there. And a couple of things came out of that. Looking at that is, one is that at the beginning it was asked, would whoever was awarded this contract be excluded from getting future contracts based on the need of the 2B and the roadmap? And the answer was that they would not be excluded. So in reality, Capgemini could be included as a future contractor or be awarded a future contractor based on the assessment that they themselves are doing. So that's something that was a little bit troubling to me because of potential conflict there. Not to say that they wouldn't be accurate in their assessment, but it would be have the appearance of a conflict if they found that, oh, by the way, we just happened to offer one of these solutions to the problem we discovered in doing the assessment. The other thing that came out of that report was that in order to achieve their cost savings, their projected cost savings, the potential of outsourcing services was on the table. What are your plans about potentially outsourcing services?
Well, there were two questions in that, so let me take them in the order you gave them to me. The first one really is the additional contracts that we'll be considering doing here are really things that revolve around, again, a lot of those commodity-type services. So as an example, the state of Oklahoma operates 7 individual mainframes, and all the processing that happens on those 7 mainframes could very easily be accommodated by only one of them. And so to consolidate those services onto one mainframe, and even to keep the other one as a hot spare backup, will cut me 5 mainframes and a lot of licensing, a lot of expenses for operations and everything else. So, you know, as we look at consolidating these 7 to 2, then we're going to go through and release all the data regarding those 7 devices that has been collected, and you know, as it's needed by the vendors. And when I say data, I don't mean the data that's housed inside of the system itself. I mean, okay, this is the type of machine it is, and this is what it's operating at, and this is really very just background kind of stuff around the machine, things that are pertinent to someone that would be looking to estimate how much time it'll take to consolidate the systems together. And so, you know, we'll put that out, and there really will be no advantage to Capgemini if they were to bid on it. I'm not saying that would be a anything that they would have an advantage on. Moreover, certainly not for price or anything else. Moreover, really, a lot of the stuff that we're looking at or we're hoping to do is going to be, my hope is that it'll be performed by, people that are within the state, because then I'll be able to go back and, you know, something like consolidating 7 mainframes to 2 isn't something that you can do in an afternoon or a week or something like this. You know, it's going to take, you know, you do one and then you let it run for a little while and then you do another one and make sure that one works. You know, we're not going to go and do all 7 at one time, because that would be very risky and, you know, kind of crazy. Now, the outsourcing question, you know, as we look at the services of the state, my initial take to it, honestly, is that no, we're not going to be looking to outsource things. I can't imagine there are going to be things that we couldn't do more cheaply. Now, the thing that is true about some services, let's take let's take email, for instance. You know, to host that externally for the Department of Education, they can get that for free from Google. So they're aware of that, and they've asked us to look at that. And we're talking to Google and looking at Google Apps for Ed and all those kinds of things. However, one of the things that's true about this is where I get into, this is one of those nuanced things, you know, where the differences do make a difference. When you have a, when you ask Google then to be able to archive and message search and message retrieve as per our open record standards and needs, well, the price of that is, you know, they don't give that away for free. I'm not really at liberty to tell you what price that they've given us on a per box thing. We're still trying to get the best and final price out of them. However, the number was really quite high. I was surprised by it. In fact, it's higher than what it takes us to provide those services internally. So, you know, those are ways for us to be sure that the service that's being delivered is not only of the highest quality and conforms to our rules and what have you, but also that it's cost effective. Because if we're performing a service and it could be done more cheaply, then we really have to take that into consideration if it is indeed a like service.
The question that comes up when you mention Google or these other large corporations is that who then controls the data, who has access to the data? Mm-hmm. Google is very controversial as far as there have been several documentaries done on Google and the fact that they save every single search that an individual does, and that the idea that there's any kind of privacy or control once you've outsourced that type of thing, you've lost it. So it's not contained within the state. We've had this discussion with other legislators about downstream information sharing. Is that concept doesn't exist? You cannot contain data in electronic format. Although you can put in safeguards, and if we start to outsource, for instance, we've given up that measure of control. So there's that. The idea of sovereignty enters the picture here. It's like, okay, how much are we willing to give out? Plus, then you're at the mercy of Google, who can go up or down in their price of their service or just shut you off. And then where you are, where are you with your ability to communicate within your own school system?
I agree. And all those are considerations that need to be taken into account. But until or unless you ask and you know, okay, apples to apples, this is the cost for me to provide and this is the cost to buy it. Well, we don't really know where in time and space we are. So I think it's a good exercise to go through and do it. And as I say, right now I'm actually quite pleased with how we're looking. So, you know, but that's beside the point. I'm sure in the future going forward, there are going to be things where we will identify some services that we're providing and it costs us a premium to provide it. Then indeed we will have to sit down and determine, all right, is this a difference that really makes a difference? And is it something that we're willing to bear that cost for those benefits? And unless you quantified the cost, you know, you don't really know what that is.
The name of our organization, of course, is Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And I was a little dismayed on the free enterprise end of that when a company that is not located in Oklahoma was given the assessment contract, and that we would encourage the use of Oklahoma-based businesses with Oklahoma employees doing any of this work. Let me real quick, before we have to let you go, we're almost to the bottom of the half hour, is that on the mainframes, are all these mainframes located in the state of Oklahoma and would be maintained within the state of Oklahoma?
Yes, ma'am, to both questions.
All right, that's great. And would you also be willing to consider that the idea of sovereignty extends to the services provided for this? And we're seeing a trend that's kind of global in nature, is to outsource services. And I'm going to use the example of, I downloaded McAfee onto my computer via my own a disk that I bought, and I had to call a service tech, and the guy McAfee, which sounds Scottish, right, or English. I talked to Akeem in South India, who took control of my computer in order to correct the problem. So when we're talking technology, the service provider could actually literally be anywhere in the world. So we're just trying to encourage wisdom in the awarding of these software contracts and commodities.
Well, there are different issues when you talk service sovereignty and data sovereignty. And so I want to be careful that we do make sure that data sovereignty, that they're not
mixed
the same
up.
Thing,
yeah.
That they are very separate things.
All right. Well, thank you. You've been a great guest. We'll have to have you back again. And as music for the bottom of the hour, this is America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We'll be right back.
Do you need to promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio@truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio@truthinfocus.org.
This is Bruce DeLay for Excel Firearms Training Center. You know, a life-threatening situation can occur without warning and force you to react quickly to protect yourself and your loved ones. How will you react in a stressful situation? Excel Firearms Training Center can provide you with the training you need to obtain your Arizona Concealed Carry Weapons Permit. Our four certified instructors have decades of professional firearm training experience, and they are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Your course will begin with classroom training at our facility in Sierra Vista, followed by hands-on weapons training at our firing range near Tombstone. You'll get the 8 hours of concealed carry weapons training required before you can even apply for your concealed carry permit. To register for your class, contact Marty Hargraves at 678-0323. That's 678-0323. Or for just more information, call William Samadi at 458-8571. 458-8571. We'd like you to visit our website. That's superquality.com for all the dates and schedules of classes. Excel Firearms Training Center, preparing you for the unthinkable. We'll be right back.
Got nothing against the big town. Still hayseed enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town. Oh, that's good enough for me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with James Parsons, whom you did not hear one peep out of during the first half of this program.
I think that was the first time anyone has ever said.
We won't say how nice that was. Okay.
You haven't heard a peep out of me, have you? I've never heard that before.
Nobody has ever said
my
that.
My wife wishes she could say that.
Anyway, you were very, very well behaved. And also in studio during the first half and is here now is Representative David Derby, who is a Republican representing the city of Owosso in the state of Oklahoma. And we are, again, broadcasting from the state of Oklahoma. We would like to direct your attention to the OK Safe website, which is ok-safe.com, ok-safe.com. And on the front page of that website is information, original source documents on the Oklahoma implementation of health insurance exchanges and their connection to what the public knows as Obamacare. All right, on which I forgot to ask Alex Pettit. We'll have to have him back. He serves on the steering committee of the health insurance exchanges, and it does have to do with the assessment that the state is conducting right now on the IT infrastructure, because that'll be key to the health insurance exchanges operation. All right, Representative Derby, we are pleased to have you here, and thank you for taking time to be in studio with us. Your bill, you were the author of the bill, House Bill 1170 in 2009, I said 2010 before, 2009, that created the Chief Information Officer position, and you also serve in the Government Modernization Committee.
That is correct.
All right. What was the thought process behind creating this Chief Information Officer's job?
Well, I appreciate that you guys have me here today, number one. And number two, the thought process was because Oklahoma was one of six states that did not have a IT infrastructure officer or an IT officer. I was talking to...
we had an IT division, though, right?
Well, you had the Office of State Finance, who had a figurehead, if you will, of a CIO, but not really. He was an accountant and not somebody who was classically trained in computer software and computers and IT and how to... have the interchanges between all our agencies. And so that's the genesis of this particular bill back then is that we were spending waste about $363 million. We are currently spending that much on IT each and every year, and we could never have a pinpoint, if you will, a look into the budgets and say, okay, we're spending this amount of money. Here's what we're receiving, because they would play shuffle games with the money. They would say, well, we need $1.2 million for computers for DHS or something like that, and only spend, you know, $20,000. And then the rest would go into vehicles or some other overtime pay and stuff like that. And so we never really had any accountability with taxpayers' money. And that's it. That's what really was the genesis of 1170.
Was it the idea of the creation of the Chief Information Officer? This is a national trend. We see that in other states, as you mentioned. And there's an association, which I think is called NASIO, National Association of Chief Information Officers. And there's some pretty heavy hitters that are involved in that. when I say that, I mean like 3M and other large corporations, Verizon, people who have a vested interest in the IT infrastructures within states. Is it the intent, was it the intent to do anything other than keep this strictly Oklahoma-based, this chief information officer position, or is the idea, was the idea to implement what's called best practices, make it just like other states, and share information and standards and protocols with other states?
Well, I appreciate that question, too.
You sound like you're on the floor where you have to say, I appreciate that
question. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Yeah.
the answer to that question was to, one, implement best practices, but not in the same way that other states were implementing them, but keep them local. And
to make it unique to Oklahoma.
Correct, and keep it internal to Oklahoma. I have never been a proponent of sharing any type of information. You can see, you can pull up some of my debates on DNA, and you can know where I stand on that. I just, the rampant abuse that we have within our IT divisions here within the state of Oklahoma is just mind-boggling. And so I was like, well, we need to fix what we're doing here within the state of Oklahoma, because it's not my money, it's taxpayers' money, and there's a lot of abuse of it.
There was a lot of controversy over creating another cabinet member position, which is what the CIO is. And so the governor's cabinet went from 15 people to 16 people plus a staff.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of debate about we were facing a budget shortfall. How could the state afford this? Has the state realized savings yet to offset the expense of adding another cabinet position?
The answer to that is not year to date, or even bill to date, if you will, since 1170.
House Bill 1170 is what you're talking about.
That's correct.
Okay.
You know, we've had to pay him, Mr. Alex Pettit, I don't know what he makes. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $150,000 a year. We've had to pay for him since April of last year of 2010. August of 2010 is when he started the review process, if you will, Capgemini. When he was hired in April of 2010, he assumed what was already currently employed at Office of State Finance as far as their IT division. So there wasn't any new FTEs created for him. He just assumed the role that the figurehead that I was talking about earlier already fulfilled, and so there weren't any FTEs given to him outside of that.
What happened to the figurehead?
Mr. Fleckinger is still there, but he is part of OSF.
Office of State Finance. Mm-hmm.
And so the only position that we actually made, the FTE position, is Mr. Pettit's position.
Because he assumed the staff that was existing.
That is correct.
All right.
And to further, you know, you talked about realization of savings and things of that nature. After the Capgemini study, if you want to get into that now, if we implement, now there are two avenues with Capgemini. One was with a $100 million bond, and that we could start saving $63 million from year one, $63 million on year two, each and every year to year seven or eight was $63 million. I am not a proponent of the bond packaging at all, because it does not force our government to shrink. It actually allows our agencies to have a kind of a reprieve, if you will. So in House Bill 1304, there isn't $100 million bond package at all within it. And so the savings is $20 million each year for the first 3 years.
What was the purpose of the bond again?
To implement all the infrastructure and things that Mr. Pettit talked about earlier about the seven servers and
the seven mainframes going to two mainframes.
Right, and all the manpower that would take to take care of that. So I'm not part of that $100 million camp. And so I said,
that a recommendation in the Capgemini report is to go to a bond issue to do this?
Well, they had two. Like I said, they had two. They had the $100 million avenue, and then they had, this is what you do if you do not have a $100 million bond package. And so I said, well, I'm going to do the latter, not the former. And so it's $20 million each year for the first 3 years, and then it's $63 million from year four, five, six.
To do these conversions?
No, that's a savings.
Oh, $20 million savings mm-hmm. first year.
First 3 years, each year. So you save $60 million for the first 3 years. And then a $63 million savings on the year 4, 5, 6, 7. And they say somewhere around year 8 that you finally have shrunk the IT expenditures to the point there aren't any more savings available.
Is this firing people?
Yes.
In what industry, what sector? The IT sectors.
Part of the Capgemini study said that we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,800 to 2,000 employees in the state of Oklahoma dealing with IT only.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and said that we only need 700. A great example is, and we could talk about Obamacare and DHS right now real quick. Excuse me. DHS employs somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 employees.
Let's just clarify, because in our audience would think DHS is Department of Homeland Security, but when you're talking about it, you mean Department of Human Services.
That is correct. I'm sorry. Yes.
That's all right. Department of Human Services.
Department of Human Services. And they employ somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 IT individuals. Part of their salaries that they're paid for are they're matched with state and federal monies. And so the example that I was given is that when you open a Word document and you click that button at the top and it says bold,
mm-hmm.
okay, that is a function source, if you will. That one little button is called a function source. With the 300 employees, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 employees who are responsible for two function sources only. So they're only are in charge of the bold and the italics. I don't know what else they do for the rest of the year. And it's all dealing with the Mosaic project that the federal government wants us to implement here.
Is that the actual name of a project, the Mosaic Project?
That is correct. We are currently on the Legacy Program, and they're wanting us to switch over to the Mosaic Program. I couldn't tell you the difference because I've never seen either one of them.
I think when they talk in Legacy, those are, in computer terms, existing mainframe computers that are too valuable to do away with but are not compatible with current hardware and software. Yet you can't get rid of them, and
they're trying to get rid of them eventually, and that's part of 1304 was to do away with that. So back to the DHS, the 300. Capgemini did this study. We were told they have 300 when they actually only need 35 employees. So you have 270 employees sitting there who are getting paid with state dollars and federal dollars, all your tax money, and they really have no function outside of two or three little IT
Can I
codes.
Go back to this Mosaic? Mosaic is part of Obamacare?
No.
It was part of a federal...
It's part of a federal...
I guess an IT infrastructure idea. Is that
mm-hmm,
what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems as though... I mean, let me see where I think you're going, Amanda. Is that you're thinking that this Mosaic idea is to have software and hardware that is compatible with a nationwide data processing.
All of it's interoperable, and you have to do away with the legacy systems.
Right.
Which are generally, they can communicate within a closed network.
Mm-hmm. And I want everybody to know that I'm not for the Mosaic Project.
Okay.
Just want everybody to know that.
David Derby is on record, not for the Mosaic Project, but a legacy system can be a proprietary system that communicates within itself, mm-hmm. but cannot communicate because of its age or the technology that is involved in it cannot communicate. And at the national level, there are legacy systems that are so important, like NOAA was National Oceanographic, whatever NOAA stands for, had
rain.
Yeah. The precipitation. Anyway, those are satellites and whatever. That was a very extensive, large computer network system that was established early on. Then there were so many changes in computer mm-hmm. Software and actual the hardware, so you couldn't communicate from one to the other. So they would have to do a bridge between the legacy systems and the new systems.
Very similar to our AWACS systems with our military. That
there you go. So you have to do away. We can't just stop the legacy systems because there's so many things dependent on them, and they're so critical. But then there have been advances in technology,
right.
And so this is these bridges. So this is a move toward the legacy, the original systems, into this mosaic. And I'm going to tell you, it's like my McAfee example, is that what we're moving toward is a global net integrated communications IT system. Mm-hmm. And you can't outsource these services. Just like McAfee, I'm calling somebody. I bought it at Office Depot, but I'm calling somebody that I think it's a toll-free number, and I got Akeem in India. And he took control of my computer to fix it.
Right.
And, so,
we just heard from the CIO, anything and everything that I can do to help stay in the
borders
of Oklahoma, then that's where we need to go. And the fact that Representative Murphy and I have monthly meetings with CIO Pettit and talk to him about that.
Let's hope that he's as faithful to that as you would like him to be. On your House Bill 1304 this year, what is your intent with that bill? What do you hope to achieve?
Well, like I was talking about earlier, is that the state of Oklahoma already pays and has developed something called CORE, which is payroll, IT services such as internet, time clock and stuff like that. Agencies with 1170 were supposed to move away from whatever they were currently using to this CORE because of the fact that there was no uniformity with payroll as far as paying your individual employees. And so there were some problems with that, especially since you're being paid from taxpayers' money. And so we were trying to figure out how to do that, and so that's what 1170 was. And so in 1304, again, we're reiterating for the fact that everybody needs to move away from what they're currently using. There is, like I said earlier, 166 bridging, if you will, or patches dealing with like Microsoft Money or Quicken to deal with payroll, when the state has already been out on record paying for a payrolling system. Currently.
Now, and this is an Oklahoma-based, Oklahoma-written software program.
Correct.
Called CORE, C-O-R-E.
Correct.
That the state developed itself.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
In-house. And so that's what...
So why haven't the agencies picked this up?
Well,
is there something difficult about it?
Well, there has not been the will of the legislature to keep your agencies on task for quite some time. And quite frankly, they're mad at me for 1304 because of the fact of my stance is that, no, you're paid by the state payers or the taxpayers of the state of Oklahoma, and they want you to stop willy-nilly with all these other contracts with Microsoft Office, or I'm sorry, not Office, but like Quicken Books and stuff like that, aren't Microsoft Books. They have essentially double contracted for the same service. So you have this CORE, and then you have another service that provides the same thing as this CORE. And so you're double paying, and it's taxpayers' money. And so they're mad at that. And, of course, the other thing is that 1304 was to remove the authority of the DHS director over those 300 employees and give it to the state CIO so that he has the ability to say, I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, your services are no longer needed for DHS, again, Human Services Agency, so that we can fire 270 of them. It's because of that study. It says we only need 30 to 35 to do the same function that 300 are doing. So why are we having so many employees in the state IT departments when we can actually cut the size of government down, which is really my main theme, is to cut the size of government. How many people we employ?
Is there any move to eliminate the Department of Human Services? Just ask him. You don't have to commit.
Well, I'm no. You know, that's the thing about the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah. All right. On that. Now, I want to get to... we'll have to read 1304 to see what the language says before we would say a recommendation one way or another. That's
well, take some caffeine pills before, because it's a slow read.
Well, we really encourage people to read the legislation before you make a decision.
Now, with that, it takes the budget away, and that's the biggest thing about it. Because we talked about this earlier, is that, you know, you had an agency out there saying, well, we spend $1.2 million on IT when they're only spending $20,000. And they're spending the rest they're trying to make up for funds in other areas. And so in 1304, we're saying not only are we taking who this person is in charge of this IT sector, but we're also taking the funds that we are currently funding for this so that we can save money that way. And so we can cut our funding that way, all in hopes that we can decrease the amount of taxes that everyone is paying.
I wanted to ask you also, while we were on the air here, is that on the issue of Capgemini being able to get a contract based mm-hmm. on their assessment of what mm-hmm. the state's needs would be. And again, I see a potential here for conflict. And is that something that can be written into House Bill 1304 to prohibit them
sure.
or their subdivisions from getting a contract in the state for anything that they find is a fault or something that's...
I agree with you that we need to do something like that. Obviously, it's a little late for the House side to take care of it, but we can obviously take care of it in the Senate because the amendments have already time for amendments has already passed.
On the House side.
That is correct.
Okay, all right, on that. Now, let's get to the health insurance exchanges. And a bill that we're going to discuss briefly here now is House Bill 2130 by Representative Chris Steele, which is going to be presented by Representative Glenn Mulready, who represents House District 68 in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Actually,
Chris Benge is old.
Yeah, Chris Benge, who was the former Speaker of the House, was term limited out. And Representative Glenn Mulready is a freshman legislator representing that area, which is Sand Springs and Sepulpa, I think, really.
Berry Hill,
okay.
And I guess the eastern side of Sand Springs.
All right, the eastern side of Sand Springs in Oklahoma. And again, we're broadcasting from Oklahoma, but your state is probably also engaged in, if you're one of the seven states that took the $54 million, that took federal grant money for this cooperative agreement, this early innovator grant, to implement the IT infrastructure for health insurance exchanges. What our state has done, there were seven grants issued for this early innovator grant, and the state of Oklahoma took $54 million. The grant application itself was 41 pages long, which OKSAFE has read, and which apparently is a very unusual thing for people to actually read the documents. So we read the documents and we find the various sections, there's four sections of Obamacare, what the public calls as Obamacare, that application, that grant, money is to be used for. And that's the authority for which it is. And of course, our state filled out the application and said, yes, give us the money, we agree. Now, health insurance exchanges are a key component of, and in fact, the main body of Obamacare, what the public calls Obamacare. This state engaged last November in a state question, had a state question on the ballot, 756, saying that we reject that. What they thought they were saying was we reject that. We don't want Obamacare in this state. There's a lawsuit that the Attorney General of the state has joined in with other states objecting to Obamacare. What I'm actually thinking has happened is that only the individual mandate portion of the Obamacare bill was actually part of the lawsuit and the state question, and that the main structure of Obamacare, which is these exchanges, is moving full steam ahead in the state of Oklahoma and in the other states that took the grant. So you voted against House Bill 2130, which is a cog in the wheel mm-hmm. That gives some authority to Dr. Klein, I think his first name is Terry Klein, who's appointed as the Secretary of Human Services, Health and Human Services in the state of Oklahoma, mm-hmm. To give him this, to be the executive director of this hub and have authority to implement the exchange in this state. Now, this all seems very complicated, but it's very simple, is that a piece of legislation was created to create this hub, this board, and now this bill is to give the executive director of the hub authority to do things. Mm-hmm. So what...
But who does it strip power from?
It strips power from the insurance commissioner.
Who is an elected official.
Who is an elected official.
To an authority Is that or to a board that has no sight of the voters?
Right. It changes the authority to the governing body, would then become the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, and Dr. Klein is the executive director of that. So, what are your thoughts on that? And what can we do to stop House Bill 2130 since it's being run by Republicans?
Thank you for adding that little tidbit on the very end, there, Amanda.
By the way, James Parsons lives in my district, so in God's country, the libertarian. He still voted for me.
Well, liberty.
Yeah, there you go.
Not libertarian.
My idea on that is that, well, I voted no to begin with because I did not like the idea behind it. And you're absolutely correct. The voters here within the state of Oklahoma overwhelmingly said no to Obamacare and anything about Obamacare. And so whenever that bill was presented, I was like, there's just, you know how you have a gut feeling about something, and I've learned to just trust it when it comes to these things. And I read it the night before, and I was like, there's just something about this I don't like. I don't like the way that it's being handled. And the second thing was I didn't really like, no disrespect to Representative Mulready, but I did not think that if something was so massive as what he was presenting to us, for Representative Chris Steele, that he should be presenting it.
A freshman.
You know, it's something as drastic as this was, and I was like...
Why does that bring up a red flag to you?
Well, those that are naive of the process are easy to be coaxed into running certain things. And I learned that my first year, is that there are certain things that I was asked to run, and I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Well, you're a freshman. You'll be all right. And I'm like, no, after you read the bill, you're just, no, thank you, but I got my 8 and move on down the road. And so that's exactly what happened, is that the night before I get done reading, I was like, I'm going to have to ask some questions, but I'm a no because of the whole things that are transpiring at that point in time.
What were the red flags other than the freshman running the bill?
Well, exactly what Ms. Amanda talked about was that here we are, we're starting to take authority away from somebody, and like you pointed out, and we're giving it to a board that isn't elected by the people, and then the people of Oklahoma said no to Obamacare, and here we are again. It's just my gut feeling said no.
Your gut is correct because and the legislature or the administration is being very adamant about distancing themselves, trying to make the exchanges not part of Obamacare, but they clearly are. Mm-hmm. They're mentioned 278 times in that mm-hmm. bill. And without the exchanges, there is no Obamacare because there's no infrastructure to implement the provisions of that law.
Right.
And the other thing is that it's coincidentally when you hear the proponents, the sellers of the exchanges, they're all mentioning the same five talking points: Heritage Foundation, Massachusetts, Utah, consumer-driven, and free market. And how I know that is just, you know, get a piece of paper, write those down. You're going to hear these words out of the Republican leadership is Heritage Foundation, Massachusetts, Utah, consumer-driven, and free market. Go ahead, James.
Well, but we just have about a minute left. So in this last minute, as my representative is sitting in front of me, I just want to first say, our concern here at OK Safe, and my concern personally, is the collaboration between the CIO, these health exchanges, the information infrastructure in that is required to facilitate these health exchanges, and the outsourcing of information to other states is a big concern. I'm just trying to give you a big umbrella, okay, of the picture of the, if I can say this word, mosaic picture.
Easy.
That we are trying to see.
It's going to be tied to your electronic medical records,
right? And I, as you're my representative, and for full disclosure, as someone that has gone out and knocked on doors for you, I would just say have your ears open, your mind open, and catch all the catchphrases, and do whatever you can in your power as my representative to go out there and make sure that there isn't this big humongous collusion of information coming all together to provide this information technology for these exchanges. And I just implore you to do whatever you can to stop that implementation of the program.
Well, we don't want to be sitting down with Alex this next week and saying, listen, we need to have a conversation about these exchanges.
And Glenn Mulready.
Right.
All right, there's the music, gentlemen. This has been great. We're going to have to end the show. We thank you for listening, and may God bless you.